namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 15, the Pandavas retire timely, text 30.
Gitam Bhagavata Jnanam Yat Tat Sangrama Murdani Kalakarma Samarudam Kuna Ajagamat Prabhu Gitam Bhagavata Jnanam Yatsat Sangrama Murjani Kalakama Tumorudham Kuna Ajagamat Prabhu Gitam
Instructed.
Bhagavata.
Bhagavata.
By the personality of Godhead.
By the personality of Godhead.
Jnanam.
Jnanam.
Transcendental knowledge.
Transcendental knowledge.
Yat.
Yat.
Which.
Tat.
Tat.
That.
Sangrama Murdhani.
Sangrama Murdhani.
In the midst of battle.
In the midst of battle.
Kalakarma.
Kalakarma.
Time and actions.
Time and actions.
Samadhridam,
Samadhridam,
enwrapped by such darkness,
enwrapped by such darkness.
Kuna Ajagamat,
Kuna Ajagamat,
revive them again,
revive them again.
Prabhu,
Prabhu,
the Lord of his senses,
the Lord of his senses.
Translation. Because of the Lord's pastimes and activities, and because of his absence, it appeared that Arjuna forgot the instructions left by the personality of Godhead. But factually, this was not the case, and again he became lord of his senses. Purport. A conditioned soul is enwrapped in his fruitive activities by the force of eternal time. But the Supreme Lord, when he incarnates on the earth, is not influenced by Kala or the material conceptions of past, present, and future. The activities of the Lord are eternal, and they are manifestations of his Atma Maya, or internal potency. All pastimes or activities of the Lord are spiritual in nature. But to the layman, they appear to be on the same level with material activities. It so appeared that Arjuna and the Lord were engaged in the battle of Kurukshetra, as the other party was also engaged. But actually the Lord was executing his mission of incarnation and association with his eternal friend, Arjuna. Therefore, such apparently material activities of Arjuna did not drive him away from his transcendental position, but on the contrary, revived his consciousness of the songs of the Lord as he sang them personally. This revival of consciousness is assured by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita, 1865, as follows. Manmana bhava mad bhakto majaji mam namaskuru mami vaishyasi satyam te pratijani priyosi me. One should think of the Lord always. The mind should not forget him. One should become a devotee of the Lord and offer obeisances unto him. One who lives in that fashion becomes undoubtedly endowed with the blessings of the Lord by achieving the shelter of his lotus feet. There is nothing to doubt about this eternal truth. Because Arjuna was his confidential friend, the secret was disclosed to him. Arjuna had no desire to fight with his relatives, but he fought for the mission of the Lord. He was always engaged in the execution of his mission only. And therefore, after the Lord's departure, he remained in the same transcendental position, even though it appeared he had forgot all the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. One should therefore adjust the activities of life in pace with the mission of the Lord, and by doing this, one is sure to return home back to Godhead. This is the highest perfection of life. Translation again. Because of the Lord's pastimes and activities, and because of his absence, it appeared that Arjuna forgot the instructions left by the personality of Godhead. But factually, this was not the case. And again, he became lord of his senses. Om Jnana Timanandasya Jnanjana Shloka Chakshuryutam Yatasvakshuryam. Arjuna is the eternal companion of Krishna, eternal associate. And with Krishna, Arjuna goes from universe to universe. Enacting the speaking of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna appears in every universe. And simultaneously, Krishna is in his own territory, on his own planet. It is not that when Krishna appears in the material universes, one after another, that that his post in the spiritual world is vacant. No. When you think like that, you're thinking about an ordinary person who is either here or there. Either you're in Wellington or you're in Christchurch. No, but Krishna, while appearing in the material world with his eternal associates, also is there in his original homeland. Krishna is so powerful that he can create facsimiles of his homeland in the material world. Krishna can manifest special places in the material world, which are as good as his original homeland. All these things Krishna can do because everything is his energy. The Vedic literature, Svatasvata Upanishad, says, Pranasya Shakti, the Daiva Shudate. The Supreme Lord has multifarious potencies. And with these multifarious potencies, he arranges things even without his working. By Krishna's will, Arjuna became bewildered upon the onset of the battle of Kurukshetra. You can read about that trauma in the first chapter and a half of Bhagavad Gita. It's a great psychological drama. You can see Arjuna lose his original consciousness and fall under the influence of bodily identification, material anxiety. Krishna is causing him to do that to demonstrate an example for us so we can see clearly, yes, this is the process of falling into illusion. This is the process of partaking of anxiety, becoming immersed in anxiety. Just like you immerse yourself in a swimming pool or immerse yourself in some activity, hobby. Similarly, Arjuna, you can see right before your very eyes in Bhagavad Gita. He's immersing himself in anxiety and bodily identification, and he forgets that he is simply Krishna's servant. So then, right before your eyes, Krishna can perform the transcendental magical feat of bringing Arjuna back to his senses again. Of course, there has to be consent. Certainly Krishna can do anything, but the consent of a living entity is what produces love of Krishna. So Arjuna consents to accept Krishna's guidance. He says, now I'm bewildered. I've lost all my composure due to weakness. I don't know what to do and what not to do. I don't know what's my duty. So now, I surrender as your student. You please instruct me. So from that point on, Bhagavad Gita takes off. Once Arjuna uses his independence to say, Krishna, you explain what should happen. And at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, Nashtamohas Matirlabdha, my illusion is gone. Karishye Vachanam Tava, I'll act according to your words, Krishna. Now Krishna's words are not ordinary. You see, when you say that the Supreme Lord is omniscient, all-powerful, omnipotent, particularly when you say the Lord is omnipotent, all-powerful, you don't actually understand the full purport of that. Omnipotent means that Krishna has the potency to be able to manifest through any of his energies. He has that ability. When you say God is omnipotent, generally people think, oh, he's all-powerful. They don't know about that power. It's like I remember a song my sister used to sing from Sunday school. My sister has a favorite. who made the mountains, who made the seas, somebody bigger than you or me. So then you imagine somebody like you, but just taller or more powerful. So that is people's conception. If they all think of God, they think, he must be a person bigger than me or stronger than me, or he's like Atlas struggling to hold up the earth. Of course, then they tend towards impersonalism. God is a force. When you think about the omnipotency of the Supreme Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam gives you the full understanding. Stated right in the introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada writes that there is a great gulf of difference between understanding God as the controller and understanding God as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, simply understanding God as the controller or creator means that you probably think the Lord is bound up with these activities of creation and control, and he can't extricate himself from these activities. But to understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you understand, as the Vedas say, Tatasya Karyam Karanam Chavijate. The Supreme Lord has nothing to do. How does he have nothing to do? Because everything is done automatically by his potencies. Svabhavati jnana bala kriyasha. His knowledge, jnana, his bala, his strength, make it so that things go on automatically. Just like you look at nature and things work so properly that you don't think there's someone behind it. That is because of the artistry and expertise of the Supreme Lord. He makes it so that things seem to be happening automatically without a pilot. But actually, that appearance that things are going so nicely without a pilot is a symptom that there is an expert pilot who can make things happen in such a way that you think there's no pilot. That's how expert Krishna is. By Krishna's potencies, he arranges for things to happen. He's not personally bound up in having to do this and having to do that. What is Krishna bound up by, if anything? The only thing that binds Krishna is love. In his personal homeland, he is bound by the love of his devotees. So much so that he even takes a subordinate position to his devotees. Krishna lets Mother Yasoda chase him with a stick. He lets his cowherd boys challenge him to wrestling. Furthermore, to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead means to understand omnipotency as the Lord being able to appear through any of his energies. If you say that God is all-powerful, then why cannot God appear as his words or appear as his deity or appear as his name? So the Srimad Bhagavatam gives the full understanding of the Supreme Lord as omnipotent, all-powerful. Krishna can appear any way he likes, as his name, as his pastimes, as his words, as his instructions, as the deity. When you see the deity, you think stone, but actually Krishna, knowing that you cannot see spirit, appears looking like stone, but actually he's Krishna. Upon the invitation of his dear devotees, Krishna can say, all right, all you can see is stone in your conditioned stage, all right, I'll appear looking like stone, but you better treat me like I'm Krishna. And then you make spiritual advancement. Similarly, Krishna can speak. God speaks to everyone, but our problem is we don't want to listen. In Bhagavad Gita, God is speaking. And Arjuna is now reviving his memory of the Lord's instructions originally given on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Arjuna is reviving his memory by remembering those instructions, and in this way he is directly associating with Krishna, because the Lord is not different from his instructions. Krishna can incarnate himself within the range of your limited sense perception. Krishna has that ability, but you cannot get beyond the reach of your limited sense perception. So the more scientific understanding of the mercy of the Lord is that the Lord, when he bestows his mercy upon you, that means he has manifested within the limited range of your senses out of mercy. So that is the instruction of Bhagavad Gita. Through the words of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is directly appearing so that you can perceive him. If you want to see the Supreme Lord, why not try to see the Supreme Lord the way he wants you to see him? Why you struggle to see another way? Any important person, if you want to see them, you try to find out what are the visiting hours, what's the protocol. So Krishna is saying, okay, you want to see me, then see me, for example, through the words of Bhagavad Gita. See me by hearing my name. It is a very great understanding to assimilate that the Lord is not different from his name, his activities, his instructions, his form. This great spiritual mystery is the gift of bhakti, Bhagavad-dhamma, Srimad-bhagavatam knowledge. Arjuna actually has not forgotten Krishna, but this is a play. He's totally absorbed in the play, in the drama, because he's a surrendered servant of the Supreme Lord. So he's totally immersed in going through a situation in which it appears that he's forgotten Krishna. But actually that is not the case, as this verse says here. Factually, this was not the case, and again he became Lord of the senses. It's all a show to teach us what it's like to go in and out of Maya, the illusory energy of the Lord. Actually, Arjuna's situation is managed by Yogamaya, the internal potency of the Lord. Under the influence of the Lord's internal spiritual potency, Arjuna is acting like he's in Maya, the external potency, Mahamaya. Bhagavad Gita is spoken directly by Krishna. And Arjuna heard Bhagavad Gita directly from Krishna. So what does that mean about your understanding of Bhagavad Gita? It means if you hear Bhagavad Gita just like Arjuna heard it, then you are bona fide. Just like, let's say, Daniel is giving me some medical prescription, but instead of telling it to me directly, let's say, he tells Huya, he should take this, he should take phosphate, 1/2 teaspoon or something every day. So she hears, yes, he has said that. And then, if she says it to me, and I hear what she says exactly the way she heard it from Daniel, then I get the same result. But if I concoct, she knows, Daniel said, take 1/2 teaspoon of phosphate. She heard that. And then she repeats it to me, take 1/2 teaspoon of phosphate. I said, oh, but he didn't actually mean that. What he meant was that if I think 1/2 teaspoon is good, I should take that. But actually, even if I don't want to take it, I don't have to. But just, you know, the thought of taking the phosphate, that'll do it for me. This is not hearing as you heard it. Similarly, Krishna told Arjuna, do this, do that, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Arjuna said, yes, I understand that. So if you're going to benefit from Bhagavad Gita, you have to hear exactly as Arjuna heard. Although if you concoct for yourself a different position, then everything is spoiled. Arjuna heard directly from Krishna. You can get the same benefit by hearing directly from Krishna if you hear as Arjuna heard. Just like if I would hear as Huya heard from Daniel, then I would get the benefit. Huya heard him say, he should take 1/2 teaspoon of phosphate every day. So if I hear in the same way, without concocting, without interpretation, then I get the benefit. It's as good as me hearing from Daniel. Huya says, He said, take a half teaspoon of phosphorus. I said, is that what you heard? He said, yes. All right, I will take a half teaspoon of phosphorus. But instead, if I concoct, but we don't have to take the instructions from Daniel from within. We take them from it out and figure out all sorts of word juggling. Actually, everyone's a doctor. The answer is everywhere. And automatically, I just destroy the whole process. Because I'm not hearing as you heard. I'm just speculating. Basically, that means I'm rebelling. Basically, in an indirect way, I'm saying, I don't want to do it. So this is what impersonalists do. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, here I am, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna says that to Arjuna. And what does Arjuna himself say? Arjuna says, yes, I can see that. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Paritram, Paramam Bhavan. Param Brahma. Brahma means spirit, or the great. So Arjuna says, you're not ordinary spirit, you're not ordinary great. In other words, you're not just spirit soul, you're Param Brahma, the supreme soul, the supreme great. There are two things, individual soul and supreme soul. Impersonalists confuse the two. They say both are the same, or basically they're saying there is no supreme soul, there's just soul. And we are all that, and that is all us. But this is not what Arjuna said. Arjuna says, Param Brahma. You, Krishna, are certainly spirit, but you are the supreme spirit. You are great, but you are the supreme great. Otherwise, everyone is great in terms of being spirit soul. The spirit soul is inconceivable. Even the minute spirit soul that powers our bodies is very inconceivable. Modern science can't understand it. So everybody is great as spirit soul. It is great how the spirit soul animates matter of the material body and makes it work. But Krishna is the supreme great. And what is the first difference to appreciate between the soul and the super soul? This is also explained in Bhagavad Gita. Chaitya yam chapi mam vidhi vasvesta sara chaitya subharata. Krishna says, you should know that besides the knower in each body, besides the spirit soul who knows the individual body, there's a supreme knower that knows all the bodies. The super soul is present in everyone's heart. You're only present in your body. You're trying to understand your body. It's like Daniel had me hooked up to his machine and he's trying to understand my body. But I don't directly have knowledge of everybody's body. In fact, I'm having difficulty just having direct knowledge of my own body. But Krishna has direct and indirect knowledge of everyone's body because he's present in everyone. Therefore, Arjuna says, Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan. You are the supreme spirit soul. Param Dhamma, you are the supreme destination. There's so many places you can go. But Arjuna tells Krishna, where you are, that is the supreme destination. It's like in New Zealand, especially when people are in their 20s, they have to have the OE, the overseas experience, otherwise they freak out. They gotta go overseas somewhere. All I know is North Island and South Island. I'm missing so much of the world. I've gotta go overseas and my horizons will expand. Then I'll become enriched. I've gotta go to London. I've gotta go to Asia, Bali. So, and that way people think, by going to a certain destination, they'll benefit. But Arjuna is telling Krishna, Param Dhamma, you are the supreme destination. So we should try to understand what are the qualities and features of the supreme destination, as opposed to Bali and London, Bondi Beach. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram. You're the supreme pure. Krishna is so pure that although you're filthy, when you come in contact with Krishna, Krishna is not affected or infected by you in the slightest, but you become pure. The example is given that the sun shines on any filthy place and purifies it. The sun can shine on dirty pools of water or excrement or anything, but actually the sun purifies those who know. They understand that. This is common knowledge in India, the effect of the sun, even the effect of the moonlight on the psychic. That's why you have that song by Narottam Das Thakur, Nithai Padakamala Koti Chandra Shushitala. Narottam Das Thakur, the great Vaishnava Acharya, he compares the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda to millions of moons. That means very soothing. Because in India, as we've explained several times, the people know that moonlight is soothing. So therefore, in the villages, they have swings in their backyards. And when they come from working in the fields, as the sun is going down, the moon is up, they just swing in the moonlight, and that soothes their subtle body. This is considered common knowledge. So therefore, the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda are compared to millions of moons. They're more soothing. The subtle powers of the moon, they're described in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Samabhutva Prasatmaka, I become the moon. In other words, as the moon, I supply the juice of life to all vegetables. The moon's rays, they not only soothe the mind, that's why even in Western society they still have that word lunatic, someone who goes crazy due to the phases of the moon. I don't think modern scientists take that idea too seriously today.
Oh, it's pretty apparent in mental institutions that people go a bit to that.
Yeah. But science, they refuse to take it up, right? Got the blinders on. So, the phases of the moon, they deal with the mind. But also the moon makes vegetables succulent. This is known in biodynamic gardening, the effect of the moon on vegetables. It's said right there in Bhagavad Gita, Samabhutva Rasatmata, I become the moon and I supply the juice of life to all vegetables. In one line, Krishna can give you lifetimes of knowledge. You can spend birth after birth studying the effects of the moon on vegetables. But Krishna, in just one line, one fourth of one verse, says, heaps of knowledge. I make the vegetables tasty through moonlight. I remember seeing many years ago a lecture by Prabhupada in the 70s, early 70s, where he was saying that stars have their own planetary systems. Now, of course, this was unknown to Western science until a few weeks ago. And a few weeks ago, I look in the newspaper, what do I see? The great discovery! Remote stars have their own planetary systems. So how did Prabhupada know that 30 years ago? There's so much knowledge locked up in the Vedas. But because people take them as mythology, they have no entrance. And because of their sinful activities, they cannot understand. As we explained many times, knowledge is state-specific. According to your state of consciousness, that determines what you can understand. So, Krishna plainly says, I become the moon and supply the juice of life to all vegetables. What else does he say? Little insights into knowledge. What's the verse? I'm the fire of digestion. Does anyone know the Sanskrit? Aham Vaishvana. Krishna is giving Ayurvedic knowledge that digestion is actually caused by a fire. Now, what kind of fire that is? Well, it's not like a flame that you would be like there. But nevertheless, Ayurvedic medicine will teach you the body has heat and it has a kind of a fire that digests food. So Krishna is giving you that hint in Bhagavad Gita that I'm that digestive agent. Also, Krishna says controversial things according to modern knowledge. Krishna says, Nakshatranam aham shasi, of stars I am the moon. In other words, Krishna is letting you know that the sun is the only thing that gives off light in the universe. Everything else, including the moon and stars, reflects. So how many years will it be before modern science figures that one out? This is the advantage of hearing from Krishna. Also, Krishna explains that he's the original fragrance of the earth. According to Vedic knowledge, the earth actually is not simply soil, but the earth has in it fragrances and materials that produce the various characteristics of vegetation, both smell, color, is stored within the earth. Therefore, if you destroy your soil, then you've done a very deadly thing, because the earth is not just a medium for holding plants. The earth actually has, by the arrangement of Krishna through material nature, the earth has stocked in it various flavors, various tastes, various smells. So therefore, simply knowing one-fourth of a verse from Bhagavad Gita, you get lifetimes of things to research. A devotee is curious how Krishna manages the material world, and a devotee is also curious how Krishna has his own personal pastimes aloof from the management of the material world. Material world means, as we say here, kala karma tamodudam. Material world is pushed on by kala, time, karma, people's reactions to their past activities, and tama, ignorance, darkness. Time, you cannot stop. Everything must become old. Karma, you must act, and therefore there must be reactions, and you must reap those reactions. And tama, ignorance. People are very content to live in this world without knowing anything. Yet, as we've commented so many times, they're so busy even though they don't know. There are four classes of persons. Lazy intelligent, busy intelligent, lazy foolish, and busy foolish. Now, who is the best? We can say, what's the best?
Busy intelligent.
No, lazy intelligent is better.
Why?
Because lazy intelligent means simply, just like businessmen, he's top businessman seems like he's doing nothing, but just by picking up a phone, he can make an intelligent decision, and thousands of people are acting a certain way. That's lazy intelligent. Still, you can see in India businessmen who are just appear to be lounging on a cushion, and the phone rings, and they just do like this, do like that, and they put down the phone and continue lounging. And an ordinary person will look and say, oh, that guy's doing nothing. But actually, he's expert. He knows how to do without doing. He's using his intelligence. This is what a Brahmana is supposed to be, lazy intelligent. He knows, therefore he doesn't have to be so active. He understands. So lazy intelligent is the best. Simply by sitting in one place with intellectual knowledge, you can set so many things into motion. Next best is busy intelligent. Busy intelligent should hear from the lazy intelligent. That is Vedic society. Lazy intelligent, Brahman is intellectual. Busy intelligent, that means like managers, organizers. Busy intelligent, they're more passionate. They have to do a lot of things. Then they feel good. At least they're intelligent about it. Then, you go down further. Now what's worse? Lazy foolish or busy foolish? What do you think about it?
Busy foolish.
Why?
Because they're busy and foolish.
Yes. If you're going to be foolish, better not to do anything. That's the basis of Buddha's teachings. All right, you fools, you don't know anything about God, you don't want to hear anything about Krishna, but let me give you a process by which you'll at least shut up and sit tight and not cause so much destruction. Now, what else are you supposed to do positively? I can't explain that because you're too stupid, but at least just sit tight, focus on your breath, and you know, don't cause so many destructive activities. That's lazy foolish. And what's the worst? Modern society, busy foolish. Very destructive. The great witty commentator, moral commentator, Chanaka Pandit, he said, better make a wise man your enemy than a foolish man your friend. Why is that? If you make a wise man your enemy, at least you'll know, although he's your enemy, he's going to act in a proper way. He'll conduct his hostilities in a gentlemanly way. But you make a foolish person your friend, and under the guise of friendship, they'll just drive you crazy and ruin you. These are material, traditional Vedic material guidelines. For a devotee, no one is enemy, no one is friend. A devotee sees everyone as part and parcel of Krishna and acts in such a way that each person can make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Now someone may think the devotee, that's my friend, that's my enemy, but actually a devotee has no friends or enemies. Qualification of devotional service, qualification of devotee is suridam sarvat, suridam suridam sarvadevina, friendly to all living entities. How do you be friendly to all living entities? By giving them knowledge of what they are part of. Otherwise, how can you be friendly to everyone? They have all so many different material complexities about them. I like this, I don't like that. But if you simply try to awaken their Krishna consciousness, well, that is common to everyone because they're all part of Krishna. This material world is ruled by time, which deteriorates everything. It's ruled by karma, and it's ruled by ignorance. Ignorant lifestyle means animal birth, next life. Passionate lifestyle means you can become a human being. It'll be a difficult birth as a human being. Goodness, you practically don't see any goodness these days. Basically, the material world runs on under two modes of nature, passionate ignorance. Goodness means you see things as they are, just like in the sunlight, you can see something clearly. If this room is dark, you can't see. You bump into things, you hurt yourself, you bang your head. You turn the light on, you can see what the obstacles are, where the straight path is. Similarly, in the material mode of goodness, that means Brahmana lifestyle, you can see. But that's practically so rare in this world. Generally, people are a combination of passion and ignorance, which means they're heading to animal species. Because of their passion, they get frustrated. Because of their heavy materialistic activities, they get frustrated. When they're frustrated, what do? They get intoxicated. And they like it. Nobody can do anything today without intoxication. Can't even sleep. There must be intoxication. That means motive ignorance. That means animal birth. This is the tragic. We should try to understand how this material world is going on. How do we stay out of those kind of whirlpools ruled by time, karma, and ignorance? By hearing about Krishna, by hearing Krishna's name, and then associating with like-minded persons. Otherwise, you'll lose your warmth, so to speak. You have to keep yourself warm in Krishna consciousness by associating with warm persons. Birds of a feather flock together. You cannot practice Krishna consciousness on your own. You must have association. That's why say Society for Krishna Consciousness, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Srila Prabhupada formed this society to give association. Otherwise, on your own, in spite of your good intentions, you'll easily become bewildered. Because you're living in material nature. Trying to become Krishna consciousness within the clutches of the material world is like trying to be dry when you're living underwater. It's a great art. But that is the mystic potency of Bhagavad Gita. You know how in India, especially people are attracted to mystic powers. You know, if anybody can produce a little something from their
palm of their hand. You know, oh, he must be God. Someone can pull a watch out of the air. Everybody thinks, oh, it must be an avatar. Actually, their watches are made by the thousands in so many factories around the world. But if someone can just pull a watch out of the air, see many people, oh, let me worship you. Please cure all my ills. Please make me rich. So, in India, many people expect that a holy man should do miracles. They want to see you produce something in your hand, and I'll know that you are a real holy man. This is ignorance. Srila Prabhupada would reply, you want to see my real miracle? My real miracle is that I can cause people to give up sinful activity. That's the real miracle. That's my mystic power. I took people who are addicted to illicit sex and intoxication, meeting and gambling, and I caused them to stop it. Why don't you see that miracle? And to maintain that miracle, we have to keep association of devotees. Devotee means one who is striving to become pure. You cannot be devotee and hold on to dirty things in the heart. It won't work. Devotee means one who is actively cleansing. You get in the shower and you get out the scrub brush and the soap and you scrub. You have to aid the cleansing process. That makes it more effective because you're adding your own volition, your own will to it. Certainly if you just go in the shower and stand there without scrubbing, you know, it'll work, but it's much more effective if you just pick up the scrub brush and scrub, rub the soap in. If you personally get into it besides just passively sitting under the shower, standing under the shower. Similarly, a devotee who wants to make advancement actively participates in the scrubbing process. I have to do this to become cleansed. I've got to avoid that. I don't put myself in unhealthy situations. I don't risk my spiritual life flirting with this, flirting with that. A devotee is also very careful not to allow others to enter into a risky situation. You don't want to be responsible for someone's fall down. So you not only know how to take care of yourself, but you know how to protect others. In other words, a devotee is one who knows how to live an antiseptic lifestyle. This is a great art, how to live a sterilized lifestyle so that no germs can trouble. Now, in the material world, it's natural that germs will appear. It's a contaminated place. But a devotee knows how to get rid of the germs. It's like Daniel and Tracy, they have mice. So they're trying to get rid of the mice. Now, it may not be possible that their house will become mouse-free all at once, but they're trying to deal with it. How to reduce it? Keep it to a level where the mice don't run over the whole place. So similarly, we may not be able to immediately become 100% pure, but we should know how to keep the germs in check. That we should know. And we should not endanger our spiritual life by just cavorting the whimsical contamination. You have to deal very decisively with it. No. You draw the line. No. So even though inappropriate desires may come to you because you're full in devotional service, you don't get overrun by it. Krishna explains that in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Desires, inappropriate desires certainly may come to the embodied soul on the path to perfection. But because the embodied soul is full in devotional service, actually the inappropriate desires never have a chance to capitalize. Because you're full of something else. Krishna gives the example of just like so many rivers are pouring into the ocean, yet the ocean is not disturbed, in that the ocean doesn't wash over the shoreline because rivers are pouring into it. Now you see some river pouring in to the ocean. Maybe you only don't see the ocean is disturbed. Ah, river's pouring over me, pouring into me, let me flood the whole land. No, it doesn't work like that. The ocean just stays the way it is. Similarly, although inappropriate desires may come to a devotee, because he or she is full in devotional service, you don't become disturbed. You don't surrender to such desires. And gradually, the disturbance, even the annoyance, becomes less and less. just like in the back when you give the cards. It's going on all the time. But because you are listening, just you and Bhagavatam, it doesn't bother you. I don't see anything here. We can't.
Oh, give the cards! Oh, the cards are in. Do you hear them? What's going to become of me? The cards! Oh, I should run out and move the speed. The cards are there.
Anyone doing that? No. Because your consciousness is fixed on something else. And even if every once in a while you hear the cards, you just, that's unimportant. It's immaterial. So material desires become like that. Now, in the beginning of the devotional life, as we explained, you know, you just sleep with it. You hear those cards. But as you become more full in devotional service, the car sounds just fade as background noise more and more. So once that starts to happen, it's your job to keep yourself pure. As a devotee, one who knows how to deal with contamination. You have to be sincere, but you also must be scientific. That means you should understand that regardless of your sincerity, you will encounter contaminating situations. You'll encounter threatening situations. You'll encounter situations that threaten your spiritual life. So you have to know how to deal with that. Therefore, Krishna consciousness requires sincerity and knowledge in that. That you understand and know that is a symptom of your sincerity. Because Krishna is giving you every opportunity to have knowledge. Krishna doesn't say, oh, you can't know. You're too young, you're too old, you're a woman in front of me, you can't know. Everybody can know. But if you're sincere, you're supposed to know. A sincere person wants to know, how can I remain disease-free? That's a sincere patient. Okay, you've taken so much trouble to cure me. Now, how do I stay out of this disease? I don't want this to happen again. That's what a sincere person does. So the devotee is one who's always trying to cleanse the heart. How to reduce the risk of contamination.